This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Few people expected the nomination of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to have taken such a dramatic twist as this. Preparations are underway to reopen the hearing next week. Judge Kavanaugh will testify again on Monday in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. That's after a university professor claimed that he sexually assaulted her when they were both in high school. Professor Christine Blasey Ford will also testify. Joining us to explore what's at stake and offer some historical perspective is NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg. Nina, welcome back to the program.
Nice to be here, Joshua.
We also welcome your questions and thoughts about where all this stands right now. We'll only be discussing this for the beginning of this hour before we move on. We will come back to this topic for sure. But if you have questions or thoughts about where things stand right now, go ahead and email us, 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Nina, briefly bring us up to date, if you would, on what's happened that led up to this decision to hold the hearing on Monday. There was the original hearing, which was super contentious and highly partisan. That ended. And then how did we end up here?
Well, it turned out that Christine Blasey Ford, back in July, had written first to her representative and ultimately to Dianne Feinstein, the ranking Democrat on the Judiciary Committee, and said that Kavanaugh had sexually assaulted her when they were both in high school at a drunken teenage party. And she didn't want to come forward and with her identity and make the charge. So Feinstein sat on it until it started to leak, actually this week and at the end of last week. And eventually, Dr. Ford decided that all the reasons that she wanted to keep her identity secret, to protect her privacy, that was going out the window because she had reporters calling her up and people at her door, and that she wanted to identify herself. And she had also called the Washington Post in July to their tip line, so she gave a complete interview to the Post, let them review the records of her psychiatrist or psychologist in couples counseling in 2012 when she said she discussed this, and the story went public, and Washington blew sky high, as it did 27 years ago with Anita Hill.
Yeah, I did want to ask you about that. You broke the story of the Anita Hill scandal and then covered the hearings in 1991 when Hill, who was also a professor, accused then Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas of sexually harassing her. Lots of similarities and differences between those two matters, but do you see any through line, Nina, between how what happened in 91 could affect what's going to happen on Monday?
Well, certainly the attitude of the committee and Republicans will be very different. The committee back then was all male. There were only two senators in the whole United States Senate, and they weren't sitting on the Judiciary Committee. Now there are four women on the committee, including the ranking Democrat, Dianne Feinstein. All of the women are Democrats. And if anybody learned anything politically from the Clarence Thomas Anita Hill hearings, it was to at least treat the accuser with some respect. So I would expect that Republicans will continue to do that, but I don't know how they attack her credibility without indicating some disrespect for her. It's a very tricky problem for those supporting Kavanaugh, who has absolutely and categorically denied these charges. And now the public hearing is set for next Monday. The committee apparently is not going to ask the White House. Republicans are not going to ask the White House to have the FBI do a preliminary investigation to go see if they can find people who were at this party, if they remember anything about it, that sort of thing. They're not going to call any corroborating witnesses either, one way or the other, not in support of Kavanaugh or against Kavanaugh. They're just going to hear from two people without any evidence collecting by the FBI, which is, after all, probably the best equipped to do this because lying to the FBI is a felony.
Right.
And when you go visit people, they tend to be a little more cooperative than they might be otherwise. And they're leaving it to the congressional staff to do whatever they do. And that's ultimately, I mean, at least in the Anita Hill case, the Democrats, prior to my breaking the story, had sent the FBI to interview Hill and got a report on it and got an affidavit from her. They don't even have that much here. So they're, as Senator Blumenthal has said, shooting in the dark when they have these hearings, unless they do something very different, and it doesn't look like they're going to do anything very different.
Yeah, Richard Blumenthal, one of the Democrats on the committee. By the way, Nita mentioned there are four women on the Senate Judiciary Committee. That would be Ranking Member Dianne Feinstein, Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, Mazie Hirono of Hawaii, and Kamala Harris of California. We are speaking to NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg about the latest with Judge Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation hearing, the process to make him an Associate Justice of the United States. Glad to get some of your comments about this. One listener emailed, if Brett Kavanaugh is found guilty of sexually assaulting this woman, he should not only be disbarred from being a judge, he should also be kicked out of the government. The smug liberal tweeted, Kavanaugh is getting the Bork/Thomas treatment. Political stalling tactic. So obvious. Nina, what about that? Robert Bork's name came up during the first round of hearings about Brett Kavanaugh, particularly after Democrats pounced on the process and tried to derail it from the beginning. And some have criticized the allegation for being so much older. I mean, Clarence Thomas, Anita Hill accused Clarence Thomas of something that happened when they were both grownups. This is something that happened 35 years ago. Is there anything to the argument that this is a political stall tactic?
Well, Dianne Feinstein says she did not do anything with this because the accuser didn't want to go public. Now, I mean, I'm a journalist who believes you can't go public with accusations, serious accusations against people, unless the accuser wants to be public about it. And Feinstein didn't let anybody know, including other Democrats on the committee, which ticked them off. They would like to have been part of this decision-making process, some of them, but I'm not at all sure that I think they would have come ultimately to the same conclusion. Unless this woman wanted to come forward, you don't have anything. I felt that way about Anita Hill when I broke the story. She very much also was a reluctant witness. She didn't want her identity to become public, and I just said, you know, you can't do that. That's what's called having faceless informers. So there is an argument to be made for what Feinstein did. And it's a perfectly legitimate one, I think. What's curious is that we're going to end up with he said, she said here if you don't have some other fact gathering now.
I was going to ask about that in terms of where this goes from here. I mean, you know, you've had a number of leading Republicans, including, I believe, Chuck Grassley of Iowa, who is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, saying that she should speak. The administration has said that this woman should be allowed to speak. But as you mentioned, there's not going to be any kind of a effort to put forth any corroborating or exonerating evidence for the allegation and Judge Kavanaugh's denial.
That seems to be the case. I don't know that it won't change. I mean, yesterday, Grassley and the Republican leadership were trying to organize some sort of a telephone call first with Kavanaugh and then with the woman that would sort of get rid of this accusation and move on. And that just didn't go anywhere. The Democrats said they wouldn't participate in it. And that ended that. So for the moment, they're calling only two witnesses. They're not having any preparatory work, but independent preparatory work. And they're walking into this hearing blind, basically saying to the American public and to Kavanaugh and this woman and the Supreme Court and its institutional integrity, they're saying to everybody, whoever performs best, we're going to believe, or we're just going to split along partisan lines, or, you know, you have a bunch of oars here, but none of them look very good to me. I think it's going to get uglier and uglier, and it's bad for Kavanaugh. It's bad for Dr. Ford, it's bad for the Supreme Court as an institution, and it's bad for the country.
I know we got to let you go in a second, Nina, but I wonder if we should bear in mind that this is only the latest of the complaints that Democrats have raised about Brett Kavanaugh, the first being the absence of documents they wanted about his time working in the White House and how that shaped his political views. In light of all of this, I wonder what we think is going to make the most difference going forward, or whether any of this will make a difference, whether he's basically a lock to be on the Supreme Court unless he withdraws.
You know, my sense is that he'll still be confirmed, but I'm not sure. I think the nomination is in trouble. And the fact is that Republicans, by a narrow majority, control the Senate. That means they make the rules. They got rid of the filibuster rule that could have delayed this nomination. They got rid of that last year for now Justice Gorsuch. And the Democrats are pretty powerless in the face of any interpretation of rules that they want to make. And I don't even know how it would affect, how it's going to affect the midterms. But the obvious thing is to say, well, this could be another year of the woman. It will energize women and Democratic women and independent women who were inclined to vote against Trump even more.
Right.
But you could make the argument just as well that it'll energize the Trump base to get out and vote.
That's NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg. Nina, thanks very much for talking to us.
It's my pleasure.
Coming up, we'll talk about the perils of identity politics. Political scientist Francis Fukuyama once predicted the end of history, a happy ending, that didn't work out quite as predicted. But his fears are getting a lot of buzz now from folks who care about the current state of our politics, both in the U.S. and around the world. We'll find out why in a moment. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.